The topic we're going to speak about is the kirov for everybody, so to speak. It sounds almost as if this would be befitting for a kirov professional type of convention or something, but really, if we look into the parshas of this week, we're really going to see that there's an element of it that really is relevant to every single person, and everyone needs to understand what is his obligation in that world, and why it is, and how he can go about doing it. It's an obligation that is part and parcel of our core mission. And that's why it's not something only for those that are capable, but it's something in general for every single person who's a maimon. Let's start with the Rambam, who uncharacteristically in Hilchos Avodah Zarah gives us a very, very long introduction to laws of Avodah Zarah. It's something fascinating as it may be, because the Rambam in the Mishneh Torah never gives long, drawn-out introductions. There's also no need for introductions. And we don't have to introduce the halachas and macholas asuras by explaining that people would eat all sorts of animals, not shech them, and eat the blood and the chaylev. Obviously, that's normal, and then people would come, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu came and gave us Torah, and we have to eat what's kosher. That's an obvious. What was there before Torah is quite simple. So why in Avodah Zarah does he spend a full perek giving us the entire history of the world as it came to Avodah Zarah? So that point, I would like to think as follows. It has nothing to do with the rest of our talk, but it's certainly an important point in its own right. I think the Rambam was bothered by a question. How it is that people ate chaza? It's quite understandable. Chaza was mutter to everyone. Everyone could eat chaza. The Torah came along and gave us a special kedusha of eating only the things that are min tahar and mitshchita, etc. Avodah Zarah is built on a mistake. Adam HaRishon was extraordinarily aware of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. One would assume his children were also aware of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and so on. So how did Avodah Zarah get started? If Avodah Zarah is not true, where did it get started from? Had there been a real gilui to Avraham Avinu, and Avraham Avinu would be really aware of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where did things change? That, I think, is why the Rambam gives that hakdam, which is fine. And that explains the whole first half of that perek. That it goes on with how the world slowly deteriorated, and first they gave covet to other beings, and then they began worshipping them, then they began being mispalled to them, and so on and so forth. Fine. He then turns to Avraham Avinu, how he realized the mistake, which could also be seen sort of complementary to this. But then he says, then he starts, what did Avraham Avinu do? He says he recognizes one God, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to him, and we would assume the Rambam should stop at that point and then go on to Hilchos Avodah Zarah. The Rambam says that Avraham Avinu went around the world proclaiming loud and clear that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one, and Avodah Zarah is nonsense, and explaining how the mistake came about, and so on. Why is it important for us to tell us that in Rambam Hilchos Avodah Zarah? If it would be sort of a chapter about Avraham Avinu, Musa Shmuz of Avraham Avinu, wonderful deeds of Avraham Avinu, then definitely this counts right on top, and so on. But we're talking about Hilchos Avodah Zarah, so stick to the point, which is how Avodah Zarah came to being, how it was refuted, and then Torah gave us all the commandments about, you know, Hilchos Avodah Zarah. What's this piece about, going out and being mekar of the world and telling the world and so on. The Rambam also interprets the pasuk Vayikra b'shem Hashem, which says a few times about Avraham Avinu. The Targum teaches it that it means he davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he prayed to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rambam interprets it that he called out and proclaimed HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is in line with what he's saying. So the Rambam also understands the Pasuk, that the Pasuk makes a point of this. Another area where this is something which is, the troubling in on a similar point, and that is that on the davening Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, the focus of the davening is the recognition and awareness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one. In the brachas that are a shevach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we never insert any bakashas. So Cheinu L'chaim, which is an insert by the Gaonim, the poskim belabor the point as to why it is that one is allowed to insert it. Why is it not a problem with the insertion of what appears to be bakasha into the shevach? And they all more or less try to explain that this is something that belongs in over there, and be it as it may, it's sort of a later insertion. But we have a chein tein, which is an entire insertion in Atta Kadosh that is earlier. It's quite clear. It's in this Siddur Amargoyim and Masechta Sofrim has it. It's quite clear that this is part and parcel of the Shmon Esrei itself. And this is not just one line of Zecheinu L'chaim, but it's a whole long tefillah being mispalo that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should return Malchus Shemayim to the world, and everyone should be Makir Malchus Yisparach. Why? I mean, it's out of place. So I think both of these have in themselves a common point, and that is, for a person who is makir the emes, for a person who recognizes the truth for what it is, has trouble, or not has trouble, but is very disturbed when the emes is perverted. We know it in ourselves when we hear someone else tell over a story not true. And the story is not something which is of consequence to us, or to anyone even. Someone tells a story of a certain gadol that it happened this place, that place, the other place, and we know the story, we know that it can't be this place, it has to be the other place. We will go at length to correct the person, we'll be very, very annoyed. And the answer is because part of the hakar of emes, part of recognition of truth, is a certain repulsion at sheker. And, you know, the Oyev Hashem Sinu Ra, and since HaKadosh Baruch Hu's essence is emes, being Makir HaKadosh Baruch Hu as emes, being Makir HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the one in the world, forces us also, or pushes us also, to detest the perversion of that in the form of Avodah Zarah. And that's why it is a real emunah, where a person firmly believes in the emes of it, creates a tremendous need and urge to spread that word, and to make and to write that the falsehood, and to proclaim the emes in the world. And that's why it's part of Avram Avinu's recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as one, that he needed to make the world flow into one. And the same thing is true with us on Rosh Hashanah and Kippur. On the day when we recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the one God at its profoundest, we are moved to say that we wait for the world to change, and the tefillah for that change is really part of the recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being Echad. It's one and the same. I want to add a point to it. It's not just that we have other people who are, don't understand the emes. So long as there are many entities in the world proclaiming themselves or other things as gods, then that's a travesty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Echad. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Echad is being diffused in the world and comes across as many beings. It's doing sheker to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, a kaviyachal. And that's why we have such a strong urge to set the record right and to make HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to proclaim HaKadosh Baruch Hu as one for the entire Bria. So the question now is, how do we do that? We're saying that part and parcel of our emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a need to make that emunah as wide as possible and as known as possible. Okay, so now the question is, not everybody is gifted, not everybody has the ability to do it, so what's the obligation upon us? So let's examine a concept which mentioned in some Sfarim, sort of Kabbalah type Sfarim, but it's a Medrash, and therefore we need to be able to understand it in words that speak to us. Chazal say it's a Medrash Medrash Rabbah, Mem Zayin Vayal Mal Avram Malamit Sha'ovas Hein Hein Amerkava. It says that Akadosh Baruch Hu went up from being on top of Avram, so to speak, which means Avram is the Merkava, the chariot for Akadosh Baruch Hu. So there is a concept which in Chazal is called Ha'avas Heinen Merkava. In Kabbalah's form, we have a lot more specifics that the four wheels of the chariot are Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov, and David. Those are the four wheels of the chariot, and they are Kadosh Baruch Hu's chariot. What does that mean exactly? If it would just be in Kabbalah, we wouldn't have to trouble ourselves. But it's a Medrash. Medrash has to have some way to explain it in terms that are meaningful to us. What does it mean? We are the chariots of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A similar concept about the concept of HaKadosh Baruch Hu coming down into this world. It says that when each generation sinned, HaKadosh Baruch Hu went to a higher rakia, so to speak, escaped this world. The Shekhinah went up and up and up. And then when Avram came, it went down and down and down until Maamar Har Sinai and so on. So there was the Shekhinah was Belyonim, or the Shekhinah was Betachtonim. It went up, it went down. Well, how do we translate the concept of Shekhinah being Elyonim, Tachtonim, in a way that is tangible to some degree, to mean something to us? So let's take an example from life and see how it plays out. Imagine a person is running some Kiruv center, and he's, you know, Kiruv center's somewhere in Shalayim, which is very typically so, or somewhere else, and he schleps in a guy off the street who've never seen any Yiddishkeit whatsoever. Nothing. Totally, totally alien. And he presents a whole spiel about the beauty of Shabbos, and one day a week we abstain totally from anything, and that helps us testify about God and brings the family together and this and that. You don't talk about anybody behind his back, you don't say negative things, and that's such a horror, and this and that and this and that. So the person could very well buy into it and believe it. But the one thing that we won't get out of a person is, if a person is somewhat of a thoughtful person, he is going to chalk it up to utopia. There was an era when you had all these utopian authors who would sort of sketch wonderful pictures of places that were structured in a way where everybody lived happily ever after. It wasn't so much that some of the ideas people didn't like, period. But many of those, when we dismiss something as utopian, what we're saying is it's beautiful in the world of ideals. It is irrelevant in the real world. People don't work like that. it's not workable because these ideas do not connect to physical reality. So we have a whole framework of beautiful things that we see them as ideals, and we negate the possibility of implementing them in this world, and we say those are non-workable ideas. That is what one would call Shechina Belyonim. It means, yes, the good that's proclaimed and projected in the Torah is great and fantastic. It resides somewhere up there. It's part of a world of ideas that is maybe doable somewhere in a heaven without real human beings, without people who are physical, with cravings, desires, ambitions, jealousies, and so on. But let's say we take the same person and we bring him to a society that lives like that, to a community that lives like that. And yes, nobody works on Shabbos, and people try their best not to speak Lashon Hara, and people then, somebody needs something, the first thing is you provide it, then you think about how you're going to get it, how you're going to find money for it, and so on. And he sees it, then he sees people keep Taras HaMishpacha, and it's doable, and everything else. Then the person slowly begins to acknowledge this as something which is part of our world, not only some ideal world that belongs in the realm of the theoretical / spiritual / idealistic, but not part of this world. Shechina betachtonim means that Akadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina, the ideals that are divine, as opposed to reality that is the physical world, those ideals cannot come into the world on their own. Just because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said it in the Torah, it does not make it part of this world. What's written in a Torah is something of a utopia. When people enact it, and the determination and consistency with which they enact it, despite obstacles, then it becomes real. HaKadosh Baruch Hu rides into this world on top of the back of the Avos. The Avos carry HaKadosh Baruch Hu on their back into this world. The Avos are physical beings whose body, so to speak, is physical, whose life is physical, and they piggyback HaKadosh Baruch Hu into this world. That's why the Avos are Hein Hein HaMerkava. That's also the sense of Shechina going higher up, so to speak, becoming distant from us or becoming part and parcel of our world. It's not that people drop totally Torah teaching, Torah understanding, whatever it is, but it wasn't part of reality. And as the big tzaddikim came in, they brought this world back into the world that's real. That is the avoda of Adam, to bring it in. So how do we do it? So let's quote, there's a pasuk that says in Vayeschanan that it tells us that we have to, we're obligated to keep the Torah and so on, and it says ki hi chochmaschem ubinaschem ve'enei ha'amim. Torah is your wisdom. People come along and they say, wow, Jews are such a beautiful, such a smart people, and they admire them. Now, the question is, it's very hard to see where just because a goy does mitzvahs, why in the world would we consider that to be a, why would we hero worship someone doing mitzvahs? Hard to see that any real guy would look at Jews keeping mitzvahs and wearing talis and tefillin and saying, wow, this is brilliant. I mean, it's not so brilliant, it's weird, it's strange. So what's the chachmas v'nasani kol ha'amim? So many of the Rishonim here, Joshua Zeran, Rabbi Bechaya, Bar Abnel, they all say a very similar point. I'll give a mashal for the point, but it's their point. Imagine we have somebody who is a phenomenally great doctor, and cases that everyone has given up long ago. He's an oncologist, and he devises treatment plans for every single person, and amazing. People that other doctors give up for, he says, no, double the dose of radiation, decrease the chemo, and it works. And this person the other way around, and this person doing this or that, and the other, and he hits it on the head each time. So the person gets a great reputation, and we say, wow, it's fantastic. The 985th patient arrives, he checks him, the other doctors have given up hope, he says, you know what? I would tell you 2 carrot sticks dipped in olive oil every day. So we say to ourselves, we catch our breath and we say, listen, this man is far ahead of everybody. His record has been for decades. He's been far ahead of everyone. And now he's obviously 3 steps ahead of everyone because he's come up with something that nobody else even doesn't even know what it's about. So this person really must be amazing, amazing. Second scenario, somebody has 0 record of curing anything or anybody, and somebody in the desperation who's suffering from an incurable cancer comes to him and he says, okay, 2 carrot sticks in olive oil every day. So we'd laugh at him at best, or we would sue him or just whatever it is at worst. And we would say this person is a lunatic. He's a raving madman. The difference is, do you have a point of reference to go by? So they say, if Klal Yisrael keeps their mitzvahs in a way, in the mitzvahs that are the understood mitzvahs, our word is a word. We're honest to a fault. We're kind. We greet everybody with a smile. We're positive people. We don't talk about other people. So when we put on tefillin, they say, wow. I mean, what I see and I understand is amazing. So this is beyond understanding. This must be 3 steps ahead of the game. And it engenders tremendous respect. But if we cut every corner on things that are mishpatim and that they are things that we can live with and understand, and yet we don't. So the things that are unusual, they become a point of mockery. If anything, they become a point of derision. You guys are hypocrites. You wear these long payas and these talis and tefillins, and you cheat and lie and steal, etc., etc., etc. That becomes the other way around. So our first obligation is to present ourselves as divine beings, meaning people who are godly. And people take note. They may or may not follow, but the biggest mashpia in the world is people who live Torah, starting with Mishpatim and then going on to Chukim in a way that is a Kiddush Hashem. That's what it's about. Anything else is any outreach kirov activity is secondary nature. So the first point is, yes, we are obligated as part and parcel of our belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu to bring about the change in the world in terms of Muna and so on. And we are the way to do it, first and foremost, in a way that is relevant to every person, is to be extraordinarily meticulous about the world of Mishpatim. And then by doing the world of Chukim, we engender even greater respect and so on. I want to just, as a side thing, bring a story that I once heard from Rav Shua. And he said, it's a really beautiful mashal. He asked, how come shogeg in every Avera takes away the punishment, and Chil Hashem not? So he gave a mashal. He said there was once somebody, a store owner in Jerusalem, who had a large shipment coming into Haifa port. Now, releasing stuff from Haifa port is a long and arduous process. It used to be, at least, with customs and this and that. And he calls in his worker and he says, Yankel, tomorrow morning you or up at the crack of dawn. You take the truck down to Haifa. You stand first in line. You apply to take out the shipment. You wait all day till they call you, and then they'll check it and they'll ask you this and that. And hopefully, at that point, you will. At that point, you're going to get it, and you'll come back at them. Now he says, I have another favor to ask of you. While you're sitting there all day in Haifa, and you have nothing particularly good to do, how about visiting? I have an old aunt, Bashel, who lives in Haifa. She's an old friend lady, quite lonely. Jump in, tell her hello, tell her I asked for her, send her regards. You'll get a big mitzvah. So I said, sure, no problem. Sure enough, next day, crack of dawn, he's off to Haifa, comes back, and he says, okay, he comes back late at night. No, how's it? So he said, well, first of all, he said, let me tell you, your Aunt Bashel is doing fine. She is frail, but she's in good health and good spirit. She sent you regards, was thrilled to have regards from you, and so on and so forth. Fine, the guy's very happy. He says, okay, where's the shipment? He says, oh my gosh, I forgot all about the shipment. He says, you idiot, I sent you for the shipment. This going to visit my auntie was a very nice thing. It's like a side dropped it. What were you thinking? So he said, we have one mission in this world, and that's Kiddush Hashem. Anything else is secondary. So what do you mean you're shogeg? Shogeg means I was busy with X, which is more important. I overlooked Y, which is less important. Shogeg is a type of forgetting. I was busy studying Hilchas Shabbos, which is very, very chomer, and I overlooked Hilchas Hashanah Rabbah, which is less chomer, and so on. Fine. So that's where shogeg comes into play. But you are shogeg on Chil Hashem, on Kiddush Hashem? What do you think you're here in this world for? The core mission of a person is to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. And therefore, and Chazal say that a person who sits and learns Torah and he acts in two ways, it says. He does business, he's honest in business, and he speaks nicely to people. Ma Brias Omosol, what do people say about him? Look at this person. How wonderful his actions are, how wonderful his interaction with people is. Fortune is the person who taught this person Torah, and so on. That is the that's the first order of Kirov that every single person is obligated and can do, should do, and is part and parcel of his core mission. Second part is when you do have a chance ever to talk to somebody. When you have a chance to interact with somebody, it could be a coworker, it could be somebody who ends up at your Shabbos table, it could be a relative at a wedding, it could be many, many interactions. Kadosh Baruch Hu, we live in an open society, and very few people live in a very isolated life, and we do come across other people. And the question is, what do we say and what do we do, and so on and so forth. So, let's take, so Chazal say, it's a Medrash Rab in a few places. It says, Kol Hashem Bakoach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's voice proclamation comes out Bekoach. The literal meaning in Tehillim is, it comes out with force. Koach means a force. So Chazal say, not with overwhelming force, but bikocho shekol echad ve'echad, it's by each and every one's koach, melamed, that he was, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was nizgale to the men could feed their strength, to children could feed their strength, mu'ubaros could feed their strength, and so on and so forth. Chazal say, nidmelehem on the yam, ke'ish melchama, on Har Sinai like a zokin. HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to each and every person kefi what he could possibly be mekabel. The Rambam, when he speaks about Avraham Avinu and how he reached out to people, he says, "Voyoyne tshuva lekol echad ve'echad kefi daito." He would answer to each and every person as that person could understand. So that means when a person is addressing other people, his first question is, what is the other person's kli kibbul? Rav Volbe writes in Al Yishur that we use the term dati, meaning religious, in the following way. This person is a religious person, this person is not a religious person. He says it's not a very good use of the term. Religion is an inborn or an innate capability of perceiving a world that's spiritual and not just material. So just like the vast majority of humanity has an inborn capacity for music, whether we've actually realized it or not, and for art and for many other things, structure, we have a kli kibbul. We have something in us that is capable of perceiving, relating to things that are spiritual and not just physical. That's called the point of religion, a person. And it varies. For one person, it is kindness, goodness. For one person, it is depth and understanding. For one person, it is total negation of physical self. Different people have different kli kibbul. And the first question when I go to speak to a person is not what should I tell them, but what is this person's kli kibbul? Who is his religious self? My father, Chaim Baruch, once taught me this lesson. I was back in America when he was sick and dying, and I was there for a few weeks, and one day I was going to speak in a community, which was quite different Ashkafa than my Ashkafa. I'd been invited to speak. And my father asked me what I thought was, what are you going to say? And I launched into, the things I'm going to say. And my father said, no, you didn't understand my question. My question was, who are you speaking to? The first question that a speaker needs to ask is, who am I speaking to? Not what am I saying. It's like sometimes you have a good dancer and he's on a dance floor and there's a chassan or someone else he has to dance with who's not a great dancer. The first thing is you take his hands and get a sense of his rhythm and where he's going, and then if you're good at it, you go along with him. You don't start dancing because two people dancing at different rhythms and different ways, it becomes a travesty. You try to pick up his rhythm and then guide him to dance with the right beat and so on. To relate to a person, I need to understand the other person. I need to see a person in front of me to feel this person's spiritual cravings, the expressions thereof, the natia thereof, where it's coming, where it's, and then I can begin to pour into his kli kibbul. That's the Pshat Avram went to each one of the Vidayt Shechat Vechat. So the HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the Fikoch Shechat Vechat. I would like to give a different meaning to the word Bikocho. Kol Hashem Bikoch sounds like HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes across with furious strength, with all of his strength. The word koach has strength. The word koach also means, in Lashon Kodesh, potential, ability. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes across, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes across to the ability of each one, to the potential of each one. What is his potential of Ruchnius? That's how you come across. So the second part of reaching out to many different people from different places, different worlds, is to understand that I first must see him as a person, I must relate to him as a person, I must be able to sort of touch base with him on his terms, quote unquote, meaning where he can understand and work through there. I want to add a word of caution to this approach, which, even though it's vital, there is something very important. The same Chazal says, maybe you would think, this is a Chazal, and this is a Medrash Rabbah by Matan Torah, Shema Elohus Harbayesh. You might get the impression there are many gods. And the different messages are all messages because there are different gods and different truths and different Torahs. Therefore it says, Anocha Hashem Elokecha. There's only one. And that's a real trick, to be able to be steadfast in what's emes, and to find the ways to get that emes to that person. Someone who was very active in Kiruv, and many times would sort of need to push the envelope, so to speak, once spoke to me about reaching out very far to people. And I told him, imagine somebody's drowning far away, and he's deep in a lake or an ocean. So you need a very long rope to get there, and that's very true. But the longer the rope is, the longer the stick that you're stretching out is, the more firmly it needs to be anchored on the shore. Because there's no point in extending a very long stick that will send you flying into the ocean. You're going to lose two people that way. And the further out the stick is, the more leverage it has, and the more you need to anchor it very solidly. It's very, very important to understand that when the Torah remains the same, yet you're able to give it expression that will speak to the other person. And as the other person begins to engage in Torah, he will be reeled into the shore. You're not creating an island for him out there. That's a very, very tough balance. It definitely is something that's more, it's a real struggle for people that are professionally in Kiruv, that this is their main function. But it's something to take note of in general as well. So let's sum up the points we've made here. We've spoken about reaching out and sort of projecting the truth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being echad to the world as being part of the core mission of a believer. And that's reflected in Avram, that he was belief itself, and therefore projected and proclaimed belief, because it's part and parcel. We do it Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, when in the heart of our Shemon Esra, we daven the v'chein tein pachtecha, v'chein tein kavod, and so on and so forth. First and foremost obligation, fulfillment obligation, is when our life of mishpatim is the way it should be, our life of a chok also becomes sold along with it. And that's relevant to every Jew, wherever he is. Part and parcel of his mitzvah of reaching out is that his behavior be admirable, not just above reproach, but admirable. Secondly, in those cases where we have interactions with people, we need to be able to, when we think about what the answer is, the first point is not what the answer is. The first point is, who's this person? What's the good in him? What's the spiritual in him? Let's start with that. Let me get my bearing sight there. And then let me try from that vantage point to see how it is that I can bring Torah to him. And while I'm doing that, I always need to be careful, as much as I'm trying to bring it Torah into his language, but the content of the Torah needs to remain what Torah is.